Welcome to the London Futurist Podcast. Concerns about artificial intelligence tend to fall into two buckets. The longer-term concern is that advanced AI may harm humans. In its extreme form, this includes the Skynet scenario from the Terminator movies, where a superintelligence decides it doesn't like us and wipes us out. But an advanced AI doesn't have to be malevolent or even conscious to do us great harm. It just has to have goals which conflict with ours. The paperclip maximizer is the cartoon example of this. The AI is determined to make as many paperclips as possible. It neither loves us nor hates us, but it thinks it has better uses for the atoms that we're made of. Today, we're going to focus on shorter-term concerns, which include privacy, bias, transparency, and explainability. These concerns are the domain of a growing community, perhaps even a profession, and they are often called AI ethics. David and I both think this can be a counterproductive term, and hopefully we can address that in this conversation, because we're delighted to have as our guest today a senior executive at Accenture, the global consulting firm, who thinks about these issues a lot. Ray Eitel-Porter is Global Lead for Responsible AI at Accenture. Ray, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Callum and David. I'm delighted to be here. Looking forward to a very interesting discussion.
As am I, Ray. Thanks for joining us.
Ray, to kick us off, perhaps you could tell us how you got involved with AI in the first place.
I've been involved with technology throughout most of my career and always been particularly fascinated by the potential of technology, the impact that it can have on individuals and on society. And I suppose that goes back to early coding days when I think our paths may have crossed, David, at Scion and Symbian. And on through the rest of my career, where data became increasingly important, and then data turns into analytics and turns into what we now broadly call AI. But at the same time as recognizing the huge potential with technology, I think we've become increasingly aware over the last few years of the potential dangers that can also accompany the application of analytics or AI, especially at scale.
Can you give us a flavor of some of the AI projects that Accenture is working on with clients?
We work across a very broad range of industries and government organizations, etc. Very many different use cases, actually. A lot of those would focus on improved performance, so optimization of systems. Those might be manufacturing systems, they might be supply chain questions, stocks and inventories. It might be in the customer service area, improving customer service responses, product recommendations. It could be into health and trying to make improvements there. So really, AI is being used today, I think, across pretty much every industry in a very much broader range of applications than perhaps we might think. It's probably just worth saying, though, that when we use the term AI today, most people are using that in a fairly broad sense. So purists might not consider it to be necessarily AI. It might just be advanced analytics. But I think these days it's used to broadly capture everything we do around data and analysis.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point, that a lot of what purports to be AI in industry is actually not. This brings us to something I think about a lot, which is that there seems to be a bit of a paradox in modern AI, because in AI research, there's enormous progress. Transformers and diffusion models, the large language models or foundation models, are improving remarkably almost every week. Quite a few people in AI research are beginning to think that artificial general intelligence and superintelligence is coming much sooner than they thought because of this. On the other hand, in deployment, in industry and government, progress is much more sedate, much slower. And you and I, Ray, have talked about this actually over several years. A very good explanation that I heard not that long ago was that, and you can shed some light on this, I guess, is that CFOs and CTOs do not like the idea of important processes in their businesses being run by systems which will make mistakes. And they have to make mistakes, advanced AIs, because they have to learn. The only way to learn is to make mistakes. Is that true in your experience, or is there another reason, do you think, for this apparent paradox about the rapid progress in research and the slower progress in deployment?
I think that's one of the reasons. I think there are several reasons. I definitely agree that's one, Callum. And I think it's generally true that we hold AI often to higher standards than we might hold humans to. if we think about self-driving cars, if a self-driving car has a single accident, that's almost newsworthy in itself. However, humans have accidents every day, every hour, and that certainly wouldn't make the news. I'm not saying it's necessarily wrong to hold AI to a higher standard, and I think generally in the way that we treat AI, we should be trying to hold it to the highest possible standard. But that is undoubtedly, I think, one of the factors contributing to the slower adoption. I think the other challenge is just around culture change and getting people to do things in a different way. You see that in many aspects, not just in AI, not just in technology, but elsewhere. People tend to like to do things the way they've done them before. So actually getting adoption of new approaches and systems is often a lot harder than developing them in the first place.
Yes, that's another very good point. We had a guest on recently, Alex Javoronkov, who's CEO of In Silico Medicine, who's demonstrated that AI can speed up the drug discovery process by enormous factors, 10 times improvement or more. And the big pharma companies are trying to adopt this new-ish technique, but it's really hard to turn their supertankers around and get people who've spent their whole careers doing things one way to change suddenly into doing them a different way. And I guess there's another third reason, which is that the people who are really good at designing modern AI systems, they are extremely well paid. They can be very picky about where they work, and they like to work with each other. And where they find each other is in the tech giants rather than in BP, Shell, or Unilever. Is that another factor that you bump up against?
Possibly, but on the other hand, I think when it comes to the application of AI in everyday organizations, businesses, and so forth, you don't necessarily need the most advanced data scientists because the challenge is a different one. The person who is very good at translating and implementing something in a business context may not necessarily be the same person who is best at making the technical intellectual breakthrough.
Yeah.
On the subject of holding AI to higher standards than we demand of humans, is there a concern in some companies that they might be sued for systematic problems in their use of AI? If it's just a human who's making mistakes in mortgage application processing or processing CVs, then it's hard to identify. But if it turns out that their AI system is systematically being prejudiced against a particular postcode or something a bit more subtle, then there could be very heavy penalties being brought on.
I think that's a good point, David. I'm not a lawyer, but I would imagine that that would be considered to be more of a problem than just random errors from an individual. I suspect exactly the same would be true if you had a person who was systematically disadvantaging particular groups, because there's plenty of legislation at the moment that exists to prohibit discrimination, let's say, in different contexts against different groups. And if you had people who were discriminating, they would also be subject to the law in just the same way. But what you identify is the fact that AI has the ability to scale and impact repeatedly much more than an individual would have. And I think that's one of the key reasons why we have to be so careful in how we deploy AI.
Are you finding that you're spending more of your time reassuring clients that there aren't worries that they need to take account of? Or are you pointing out things to the clients that they may not have thought through? And you're telling them, well, here's something you should be considering. And by the way, here's a possible solution to that other worry as well.
I would say it's a balance. And I think it's also changed and is changing rapidly. So if I go back 2 or 3 years, there was definitely a lot more emphasis on us having to evangelize and explain to organizations that there was this concept of responsible AI and that AI could cause harm. And here's how you might go about thinking about that. Now, I would say there are many more organizations who themselves have recognized this. It's become much more of a CEO and board level topic of concern. And therefore, whereas conversations were a few years ago generally driven from the bottom up, so it was very often the data scientists who were involved in the day-to-day of AI development who were finding that they were perhaps being put in a position where they were uncomfortable about having to make a decision about how biased or not an algorithm should be. Now the pressure is also very much coming from the top down. And so the data scientists are more likely to be given a framework which has been agreed across the organization for making these kinds of difficult decisions.
Your job title is Global Lead for Responsible AI. Is responsible AI what other people call AI ethics? Are they more or less the same thing?
That's a very good question. And actually, I heard another podcast not long ago where that topic was discussed at length with Margaret Mitchell. And I would borrow from her distinction, which was that responsible AI focuses more on the application of ethics in AI. So I would say that when we talk about responsible AI, we're not really trying to make ethical decisions. We're generally accepting a set of ethical norms, a set of behaviors that typically an organization will want to follow. So the application of responsible AI needs to be driven by the core values and the ethics, if you like, of the organization. And different organizations may have slightly different interpretations or areas of focus, let's say. When we think about responsible AI, we're very much thinking about how do you take those principles, how do you apply them in a way that ensures that AI is safe and effective when it's being used.
But most companies don't have a moral philosophy handbook. Most of our values are implicit. And of course, actually, if you dig into our values, we all disagree wildly. That's called politics, I suppose. So you have to, in a sense, be making decisions about what is the right thing. For instance, should a company retain data about customers' health? And if so, which bits of their health? Their sexual health? The paternity of their children? There's all sorts of interesting questions which different people will come down on different sides of, and most companies don't have a handbook for how to handle that. You must have to make up decisions about these sorts of things on the fly.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, Callum, and that's exactly where, when we're designing governance structures for organizations that are trying to take principles and put them into practice, a lot of it is around how you resolve these different types of situations. So typically, an organization is going to start with articulating a set of principles, high-level principles. But let's just take fairness as a principle. It's very easy to say we want to be fair, but there are many different definitions of fairness. Many of those are contradictory. You can't be fair to everybody. There are lots of complications here. So the key is designing a governance framework that helps people to make those choices in a way that the organization is comfortable with and in a way that the individual feels supported. Because to me, the key thing you don't want is some poor data scientist at the front line having to make that choice on her own, his own. That's not fair. And it also wouldn't give you consistency across the organization. So you need to have these structures in place where people can have discussions, have debate, and there's an appropriate framework within which these kinds of choices can be made.
And what does that mean? What is this structure? Is it a council, a workers' council that meets every week and discusses the latest responsible AI issues that have been thrown up by the work?
The first thing is about ensuring that there are controls throughout the AI development process. Many organizations now will have some sort of MLOps or structured development process. You want to embed control points throughout that cycle that at least asks the right questions, starting right at the very beginning. Is this an appropriate use for AI? Should we be using, let's say, facial recognition in this particular application area? So that's a business question. It's not a technical question. Then you move into choosing your data sets for training, developing the models, and at all these different stages, you will have appropriate questions being asked. And then above that, you need a kind of escalation structure. You need to define who is going to be making the decisions about what is appropriate, what isn't appropriate, and under what circumstances those need to be referred up to a higher level. And in many organizations, we do see there being a sort of ethics board, if you like, at the highest level. Some organizations have those as purely advisory. Some may have them with execution authority. There are different models that different organizations can have, but you need that structure. And I personally think it's quite helpful to have some sort of ethics board at the highest level that has broader representation and inclusion from people who aren't members of the company, because it can be quite helpful to get different points of view.
Do you see these ethics boards working well in practice? I might imagine that with outsiders there, they may not be up to speed with the actual issues that are live in the various projects. So I can imagine some members of the employee team may be a bit unsure about the wisdom of allowing outsiders that kind of say. But do you see them working well in practice in some of the engagements you're doing?
We've definitely seen them adding value, yes. I do think they need to be constructed carefully. The terms of reference, etc., need to be understood. But I think having the variety of perspectives and selecting the members of your ethics board is also extremely important to bring real diversity, and diversity in many different senses. We typically talk about the categories of diversity around gender and ethnicity, etc., but also just diversity of lived experience, of geography, things like that can be incredibly important and bring a very different perspective.
That all makes a lot of sense. I do have a question about the use of the word ethics in this context. David and I have discussed this before, but if you use the word ethics, a couple of things happen. Firstly, you bring into play a set of moral questions, which we've been debating since the ancient Greeks, and maybe we've made some progress, maybe we haven't, that's debatable, but we're nowhere near concluding the arguments. And most people have quite different views about what the right ethical answers are to any question. And that's not terribly helpful. It means we can't really ever resolve anything. And the second problem, which is worse, is that if you disagree with somebody about ethics, then they're not just making a mistake, they're actually morally wrong. And that means that conversations about what is the right thing to do, what's the best thing to do, become very heated. And people often get quite self-righteous and angry about things. I think the word that you use, responsible AI, is a much better word for it.
I agree, to be honest, Callum. I agree for exactly those reasons. Some people also use the term AI safety, meaning essentially the same thing, because when we talk about responsible AI, we're basically talking about the safe use of AI.
I used to prefer the word AI safety as well, but it's been co-opted, not unreasonably, for the business of making sure that superintelligence is safe for us. That's also called AI alignment, but I think that's the way the language has gone. So we need a new term for ethics. And I think your responsible word is a good word for it.
The other issue I have with AI safety is it emphasizes stopping AI doing bad things, whereas it could also emphasize doing good things better with AI, such as promoting trust. I see trust and responsibility as akin in the 2020s to where usability may have been 20 years earlier, when software engineers learned that there was an issue as to how software was used by real people. It wasn't just enough to have high-performance software or software jammed with features. It was very important that software could be easily understood and easily operated by real people. The products that put more emphasis on usability, generally, not always, were more successful in the marketplace. I see the same thing happening with trust and whether users are confident that the organizations that have access to their data are using it for the user's sake rather than just to boost profits for the corporations without regard to leakages and misuse of that data. So emphasizing trust, emphasizing a broader notion of human flourishing, I think has to be part of the package as well as just saying, let's avoid bad things happening.
I completely agree, David, and that's one of the key reasons that we see behind organizations that are really leading in this area of responsible AI. It's undoubtedly true that there's also a concern about emerging regulation, and there will be very stringent regulation coming forwards quite soon. EU Draft Act for AI is likely to be approved next year and then will come into force probably 2 years after that. That feels like a long way off, but actually it's not, because we see, as Accenture, from our work with clients, if you're trying to build a really robust governance framework, the technical tools, etc., that you need for responsible AI, it's actually often a 2 year plus journey for a large multinational. But undoubtedly, the other key driver for interest is building trust, because organizations recognize that if they're going to be able to scale the use of AI, which they see as being a key way of better customer engagement, selling more products, better employee engagement, reducing operating costs, and so on, if they're going to be able to get adoption of that, there has to be trust. And frankly, trust in AI is not necessarily that high. If you read the sort of popular press, you know, most of the stories aren't necessarily positive. So building trust is absolutely critical, and being a leader in responsible AI is a great way of helping to do that.
What are the key provisions of the EU AI Act as it stands so far, as it's emerging so far?
One of the key aspects, which I think is very sensible, is that it's a risk-based framework, which means that they attempt to identify uses of AI which would be higher risk. And by higher risk, effectively, they're saying have a larger impact on human beings. When you think about it, that covers actually a very wide range of different applications. It includes obviously things in health, it includes things around physical safety, so let's say transport and so on, but it also includes access to finance, so anything in lending, etc., social security decisions, police and justice, employment, use of AI in HR. So if one thinks about it, there's actually a very wide range of different applications where AI can have a very significant impact on people's life chances or on their physical safety. And what the Draft AI Act aims to do is to impose quite stringent regulations on how that AI is developed, is tested, and is then monitored and governed, including provisions for record keeping and so on, so that if anything does go wrong, there's an audit trail that people can go back and look at.
Some of my friends, especially those in America or those of a political persuasion that dislikes EU meddling, they have expressed horror to me at this possible interference by EU regulation on the innovation possibilities for AI startups. They're saying it's a shame that things will be slowed down by such a regulatory framework. We might see a migration of innovation overseas to other places. Are you sympathetic to these concerns, Ray?
I do hear that concern raised a lot, David, as well. And I think it's a tension that we've seen in other areas of regulation when it comes to new technologies and so forth as well. I also think it's true to say that the EU AI Act is likely to have global reach. We did a survey published in the summer of this year, a survey of 850 global executives. And one of the questions that was asked was, do you think that the EU AI Act will have an impact on your business? And 95% of respondents said that they did expect it to impact their business, at least in some way or other. And so I think there is a likelihood that the EU AI Act may develop in a similar way to GDPR, which has effectively become a sort of global standard when it comes to data privacy. Because for large multinationals, it's seldom practical to have very different compliance and governance standards in different areas of the world. Obviously, sometimes regulation requires that, but it's quite hard to achieve, and that it has a higher cost overhead. So it may well be that it becomes a sort of de facto standard. I think we then just have to really work hard, David, to make sure that it is as innovation friendly as possible, because clearly nobody wants to slow down innovation. And that is the main concern.
In principle, it's just advocating what all futurists would say are best practice in any case, thinking through things in advance, considering the scenarios that aren't just simple consequences of extrapolating what we're doing now, but could have whole new dimensions to them because of the interactions of new technologies, and making plans to intervene in case some unexpected consequences arise. So in principle, it's just what I think futurists would sign up to, which is thinking through the future in advance. Is there scope for organizations, large and small, to influence the evolution of these standards?
Yes, absolutely. And the standards bodies and the various governments, etc., are consulting with industry extensively, and Accenture and many, many others are participating in that process. And the EU Draft Act has been through a lot of revisions based on people's feedback. So I think that's very good. But just thinking about your point there, David, an analogy that I often use is with engineers building a bridge. Today, nobody would ask an engineer if they should be building safety in as one of their considerations up front. It's just the way it is. And it's quite possible, I imagine, back in whenever, that that was considered to be innovation inhibiting, that you might not be able to try out some interesting new design feature or visual appearance for a bridge. But still, we would want to do so in a way that we test it and we make sure that it's absolutely safe. And we still have amazingly interesting bridges which get built. And I think we will have to arrive at and should arrive at a situation where responsible AI by design is just normal. At the moment, most people consider responsible AI as a sort of add-on to an AI project. It's not part of the core process for everyone, but it should be. It shouldn't be a second thought. It should be embedded from the start.
I think that's absolutely right. An AI system which discriminates against a minority or which prejudices consumers because it makes their data available to bad actors isn't an AI system that worked well but had an ethical malfunction. It's an AI system that didn't work. It strikes me that it's not unreasonable for Europe to want to regulate the way AI affects its 400 million EU consumers. They're wealthy. They have every right for their governing body to want to regulate this very powerful technology. What always seems to me a shame is that Europe is doing that and isn't really playing its proper role in the development of AI. Cutting-edge AI is developed largely by the big tech companies in America and the big tech companies in China, plus the Chinese government. And there aren't any European AI giants, as far as I know. There's the Human Brain Project, which seems to be pretty much hiding its light under lots of bushels. That seems a shame. Do you ever think about this? Is there something that the EU could do to step up to the plate?
I mean, I completely agree, Callum. It would be very good if that could happen. I'm not sure I have practical solutions to the problem. A similar challenge exists, I think, with regulation. It would be great if we could have global consensus about how to regulate AI. But that is also extremely challenging because of the different perspectives that come from different governments and different regions. I think within the industry, the feeling is that standards may help to play a role of making different regulatory environments more interoperable, because the laws that are passed will often refer to standards, perhaps from bodies like ISO or IEEE, or there are other very well recognized globally accepted standards bodies. If they can play an important role in helping to define some of the criteria, some of the standards that are referenced within the legislation, that may be a way of making the different regulatory regimes more interoperable and consistent across geographies.
One thing I'd like to see as well is more clarity on where diverse opinions can legitimately have different views. What you referred to earlier, Ray, the different contradictory definitions of fairness. People may intuitively think, well, if it's fair, it's going to do this. And it turns out that if you write down all the instincts, they will lead to different recommendations for how to manipulate data. This finding should not be hidden away and shouldn't just be of academic interest. It should be raised, and so people will consider it more fully. Other trade-offs in terms of equality of opportunity. Everybody says, yeah, it'd be nice if everybody had equal opportunities, but then when you think about it, there are possible drawbacks. Let's get that on the table as well. It's hosting a grown-up, comprehensive discussion, and out of that, I'm hoping there will be the right kind of diversity within a respect for true core responsible AI principles.
I completely agree, David. I think greater transparency would be valuable. I had an example actually from another podcast I was listening to, which was in the DeepMind series, where they were drawing attention to the fact that if you had gone back a few years and done a Google search for CEOs in the UK of large companies, what you would have found would have been results coming back which were predominantly white male images. Now, apparently, the reality is that there are only 7% of CEOs who are female in the UK in large companies. But if you do that same search now, and I actually tried it this morning, you will see a much more diverse set of results coming back, because Google have taken the decision to deliberately portray a view of the world that we would like to see rather than necessarily the world that we see at the moment. But I didn't notice any immediate transparency saying this is a choice that we have taken to represent in this way. And it feels to me that making these decisions transparent is an important part of conveying the messages.
Given that Google's self-proclaimed motto is making the world intelligible, that's an absolute must. You know, if they're going to edit the way the world is, they ought to be telling us what they're doing.
Finally, Ray, can we look ahead a few years? How do you think your role or the role of people like you might be different perhaps in the next 2 to 5 years ahead?
It's interesting. When Callum did the introduction, he referred to almost a profession of AI ethicists. Let's call them responsible AI people rather than AI ethicists. I do think that there will be an established group of people who are core within a data science team, who are looking at the responsible AI aspects and tasked with that. They will be people who are trained specifically or have additional specific training in the areas of responsible AI, just as in the same way as today, you'll have certain data scientists who specialize in NLP and others who specialize in different techniques. And I genuinely think that we will see a situation where part and parcel of an AI team would be its responsible AI component and the way that it approaches that. And I think that the regulatory moves that we've seen have definitely helped to accelerate that. To that extent, they can only be a good thing.
Ray, thank you very much. Very interesting conversation. And I'm delighted by the idea that responsible AI could replace AI ethics. Thank you very much for taking part in the podcast.
It's been my pleasure. It was a very interesting discussion. Thank you both.
Thank you.